Philo Torah Zoom Shiur for Yom Rivi'i, Wednesday, the sixth day of Elul, 5786, corresponding this year to August 19th. We'll say a happy anniversary between his Hebrew and his English dates to Mark and Joni, right?
Yes. Yeah.
40 years. I didn't look up what 40 is, but it might be Ruby.
Okay, somebody,
or no.
somebody mentioned it's Ruby. Somebody mentioned it's Ruby. Yeah, I hadn't looked into it either.
And in another couple of days, I hit 50 months. I actually went on to ChatGPT to get an equivalent for months of the word anniversary. And I didn't like what they had, so I said, let's make up a word. And so we came up with Luniversity. Luna meaning month, so. Okay.
That's also tough. Kane Yerbu.
Amen.
Thank you.
We're coming up to 47 years next week, please God. Next week, 2 weeks, maybe.
Aha, you don't even know.
Mazel tov, we just celebrated our 30th wedding anniversary last week.
Many more years, all of you.
Thank you.
Mazel tov.
Okay.
You people are making me feel very old. We're headed for our 58th.
Whoa.
My God, you're Yirtza, making me feel so old.
Yirtza, we can't make
so you got married very young.
Okay, down to business. Tehillim Kuf, to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And again, I say, every time I see the news, Trump is angry at Netanyahu, Trump is doing this, he's having peace talks with Iran, he's cutting off the peace talks. I don't know what's going on. I don't think anybody knows what's going on. And we still have to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you for every single thing that's good for us. And we have to ask him, and our ratio just coincidentally is 2 times to 1, because we use 1 chapter of Tehillim to thank him and 2 chapters to ask for more. And we just have to keep doing that. But we should not leave out the thank you for every little thing. And specifically for what happened yesterday, the return of the remains.
You hit the cats.
28 years of one of the original MIAs.
48 years, isn't it?
44. 44.
How many?
4 years.
44.
48.
Okay, I don't know where I got 28 from.
It's in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
No, 82.
I believe.
June 82 was the Lebanon War.
Yeah.
They so still have to bring back Ron Arad, though. He's like still amongst them.
Yeah.
Okay, Tehillim Kuf. Mizmor Letoda, Hariu Ladonai Kol Ha'aretz, Ivdu et Adonai B'simcha, Ba'u Lefanav Birnana. Du'u Ki Adonai Hu Elohim, Hu Asanu V'lo Anachnu Amo V'tzon Marit. Ba'u Sha'arav B'toda, Chatzerotav B'tehila, Hodu Lo Baruch Hu Shemo, Ki Tov Adonai Le'olam Chasto, V'ador V'ador Emunato. Mark, take Kaf.
Lamar Seach Mizmor de David, Yancha Adonai Beyond Sarah, Yisagel Hashem Elohe Yaakov, Yitlach Ezrach Mikodes, and Mishon Yisadeka, his core coming Josefa, we all as a Hayed Ashenesela, Eten Lafak of Vecha, the Hol as a Sahay Male, and Ron Rabbi Shua Secha, Ushin Elohim need gold, Yamale Adonai, Komit Alo Secha, Atoyadati, Ki Hoshia Adonai Mishifo, Yan Eumishamekosho, Rose Yesha, Imino. A level refer, the eleva to see, but not the shame, Adonai Elohinu Naski here, he mock for over a follow, but not to come to Panis Odod, Adonai Hoshia, Hamelchia, and Enu, Yom Koreno.
I know. David. Kuf.
Shir lamalos, Esrainayela Hari, Mayain Yavoesri, Ezri, Mayim Adonai, Osei Shemaim Vares, Al Yitain Lamotra Glacha, Ayanum Shomracha, Hine Lo Yanum Vlo Yishan, Shomer Yisrael, Adonai Shomracha, Adonai Tzilcha, Ayad Yiminecha, Yomam HaShemesh, Lo Yakekav, Yareach, Ba'alayla, Adonai Yishmarcha, Mikora,
What
Yishmar
did you
Esna.
say?
Adonai Yishmar Tzeis Chavo Echa Me'ata V'ad
Mark.
HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yishmur v'yatzil es chayalinu mikol tzara v'tzimcha u'mikol nega mahalah. V'yiklach v'rachah v'hazachah b'chol ma'aseh yedehem. Yadber eso ne'enu tatehem v'yatarem v'feser yishtu'ah u'v'atar eti tachon. V'yikuyam b'hem ha'kasuv. Ki Adonai Elohechem ha'olech imachem lehilachem lachem im oyevechem lo'siyaschem. V'nomar amen.
Amen. Together, Achenu kol Beit Yisrael, Hanatunim batzara v'ashivya, Ha'omedim bein bayam, bein bayabasha, bein ba'avir, Hamakom yirachem aleihem, v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha, u'me'afela la'ora, u'mishibud le'gu'ula, hashta ba'agala, u'vizman kariv, v'nomar amen. Let me just clarify. In my mind, the three chapters of Tehillim that we say should be said by everybody together. And the Misha Berech L'Chayalei Tzahal is recited, and we listen to it and say Amen at the end. And the Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael, I recommend that everybody say together. But you could do whatever you want. You want to listen to the recitations of the Tehillim, you could do that also. You want to join Mark for Misha Berech L'Chayalei Tzahal, you can also. Maybe we'll get one time Shai Abramson to do his version of Misha Berech L'Chayalei Tzahal. And Achenu, say together, but it's not absolutely necessary. Hold on. Giving a shiur, I'll call you later. Bye. And that's the story. Okay. Now, let me jump into Parshat Ki Teitzei. First, let me refresh you on what I did for the first time. I actually printed out separately the 44 parshiot in Parshat Ki Teitzei. 44 is by far the most of the Torah. The average of parshiot per sedra is about 8 or something like that. 44 parshiot, noteworthy, if you want the finer distinction, between Petucha and Setuma. They have two parshiot Petucha, 42 Stuma. A Stuma, to me, if you read paperback novels, is the difference between a different chapter, that would be a parsha Petucha, and sometimes within a chapter, you get a blank space, maybe with an asterisk in the middle or a line, as if the author is talking about something else, but it's very related to what it came before. That's a Parsha Setuma. And as I've said, Parsha Setuma sometimes is, you can make a comment how it's connected to the previous one and the next one. A Parsha Petucha is more of a break. So to use the examples here, you have, as I mentioned on Monday, I think, Eshet Yifat Toar, and a man having a wife, two wives, one of which he doesn't like so much, and a Ben Sora or Mora, or a rebellious child. Those are related in a drash by saying that if a person marries for the wrong reason, and Eshet Yifat Toar, a beautiful captive in war, to lust after her and take her as a wife, often will lead to change of heart and not liking her so much, which can create, if there's a child, a rebellious son. And the next part, which is about the death penalty related to that, can come because of Ben Sora Remora. And I can't really connect it to Lost and Found, which are the next couple of parshiot, or men and women exchanging styles of garments and other things, which we could talk about. But then the Petucha is Kan Sipor, which is sort of like saying, don't try to connect me to what's above. It's a new kind of thing. But then all the rest of them are connected until the very last parsha in the parsha in the Sedra, which is Amalek, Zecher, Parshat Zohar. So anyway, we'll talk about that. But I want to relate to what I had ChatGPT connect in my background here. You will notice on my right-hand side, I don't know if it's the same as yours, one of them, you'll see a sweater in the middle between a sheep that's giving its wool into the sweater. And on the other side, that's a flax plant, which I don't know how many people know what a flax plant looks like. I didn't, but that's what I asked for, and that's what I got, and that's what is made from. So the flax plant is giving its fibers, and they both come into the sweater, which is chutneys and forbidden. Okay. Next to that, you have an ox and a donkey harnessed together, pulling a plow. So here's my number of comments about this. With 44 parshiot and 74 mitzvot, I made an analysis of which mitzvot are in which parshiot, and I found that there are some parshiot that are one mitzvah, and some that are two, and some that are three. I didn't find any that's more than three. Out of the 44 parshiot, I found seven that are not containing mitzvot among the 74 from Ki Teitzei, mostly because they contain mitzvot that we've already counted someplace else. So to me, it's surprising and noteworthy when you find two different mitzvot, in this case, prohibitions, that share the same paragraph, the same parsha. And case in point is lo tacharosh b'shor uvachamor yachdav, not to plow with an ox and a donkey combined. And that's followed without a parsha break to lo tilbash sha'atnez tzemer ufishtim yachdav. What I find further noteworthy is the language. Lo, tacharosh, tilbash, two verbs. Don't plow, don't wear. Shatnez doesn't match. But bishor uvachamor yachdav, with an ox and a donkey together. Tzemer ufishtim yachdav. So that puts them in very similar sounding mitzvot, but there are a good number of differences which I want to review. First of all, shatnez is extremely exclusive, meaning wool, linen, and wearing. There is no expansion of that, not on a Torah level, not on a rabbinic level, and not even on a custom, minhag level. In other words, if one were to look into the reasons given for shatnez, which is not easy because shatnez is a classic chok. But if one were to look, there are a lot of mitzvah explainers who say, yeah, I know this is a chok, but here's a handle. So the ones who speak about wool and linen, chutneys specifically, combine it with a whole bunch of other prohibitions of mixtures. We are not allowed to mix crossbreed animals. We're not allowed to mix milk and meat. That would be examples of two prohibitions related to animal mixtures. Then you have Kalai Kerem, which is the prohibition of planting grain or vegetables in a vineyard. Now, just picture the fact that a vineyard has raised vines which cover an extensive area, talking about professional grape growers, and there's a lot of land under the grapevines that you might as well plant something. But you can't. You could plant flowers, but you can't plant anything edible. And I found out from my own personal garden on our Mirpeset that under our grapevine, I can't even have herbs that we use to flavor food. So the only thing that's under the grapevine on my Mirpeset porch is our flowers that are not edible. So that's Kalai Kerem, which is a plant prohibition of mixing. Then you have Kalai Zra'im, when we put in basil plant and asparagus plant and oregano, not oregano, rosmarin, we had to keep them separate. You can't put them very close to each other. They have to be either in different planters or with a certain distance apart. That's called Kalai Zra'im. So you have forbidden mixtures, plant, two of them at least, and plant and animal, two of them. And you have chutneys, which represents a mixture of plant and animal, because wool comes from an animal and linen comes from a plant. So, looking at it in that context, one might say, all right, I get the point. If fiber from the animal, wool, is not allowed to be mixed in a garment with the fiber from the plant, linen, then maybe I should be machmir in not using cotton with wool. Now, we have plenty of examples of mitzvot that are expanded in oral law on a Torah level. I'll give you an example very soon. We have mitzvot that are further expanded on a rabbinic level, and custom could go even further. But with chutneys, if you walk around proudly saying, I won't wear cotton or wool garments, it's shtuyot, it's nonsense. Very exclusive. And as I've said, you can weave wool and linen together in a parochet for the Aron Kodesh and Shul, and there's nothing at all wrong with that. Someone says, well, we should make the parochet without chutneys because chutneys is asur. No, chutneys is asur in a garment. More than that, the Kohen Gadol has chutneys in his garments. And according to a major opinion, so does every single Kohen. A regular Kohen has four garments. Three of them are white linen, namely his pants, mechnasayim, his tunic, kotonet, and his hat, migba'at, or mitznefet, and his belt, his sash, according to many opinions, is a weave that makes it chutneys. To the point, which I think I mentioned the other day, he has to remove his sash when he takes a coffee break because he's not doing avoda. Doing avoda in the Beit HaMikdash overrides the iser of wearing chutneys. Taking a coffee break does not override it. And the Kohen Gadol is allowed to wear his garments even when he's on his coffee break or his lunch break, because that's his full-time job. So you can't wear garments of wool and linen, linen specifically, wool specifically, garments specifically, with the notable exception of the garments of the Kohanim and the Beit HaMikdash. So it's a very exclusive and to some extent puzzling, which makes it a chok law. Now you take the other one. Not plowing with an ox and a donkey together, notwithstanding the fact that the language is very similar. Lo, no, don't, a verb, two things together. The word yachdav ends both of those psukim. Notwithstanding that, shor v'chamor, we say not just shor, but any animal, not just chamor, but any animal, not just plowing, but any activity. So, a few examples. My favorite one, which I think I had in the past in the background on Ki Teitzei, is the one from I got from Dr. Seuss in his first book, and to think that I saw it on Mulberry Street, where he has an elephant harnessed to two giraffes pulling a bandwagon and a further trailer of a house with an old guy sitting on a rocking chair listening to the music that the band is playing. That, when I first saw it, I said, Asur. And when I saw it and thought about it again, Asur min haTorah. This is not rabbinic legislation. This is rabbinic transmission of Torah Sheba'al Peh that shor, lav dafka, it applies to a giraffe as well. Chamor, lav dafka, it applies to an elephant as well. And lo tacharosh is not specifically harisha, any harnessing of the two animals to do any task is forbidden on Torah law. I think that helps me understand further why they're in the same parsha to show us that contrast. Because when you're talking exclusive, just wool and just linen, or inclusive, any animal, not just an ox, any animal, not just a donkey, then the question is, you're driving me crazy. How do we know? You look in the Torah to every time it mentions a donkey. Most of those times, it's using donkey as an example of an animal that was common at the time. People knew what a chamor was. They didn't know what a giraffe was. They didn't know necessarily about elephants, but they knew donkeys. So when the Torah speaks in this parsha of finding a donkey that's roaming around away from its home, then that becomes a topic of lost and found, specifically with an animal you're required to take it in and take care of it until you could determine who it belongs to and how to return it, even though that could be a tircha. But donkey is an example, as it is in this case. Then you get to the topic of a firstborn donkey requires redemption, cannot be used without redemption. And you would like to say, oh, I don't have a donkey, but I have a horse, and she's giving birth to her first offspring. And maybe the same rule would apply because I keep hearing not just a donkey, but any animal, not just a donkey, but any animal. And here it's a donkey, and it is exclusively a donkey. There is no other non-kosher animal that has the halacha from the Torah of Pidyon Peter Chamor, except a donkey. And nobody is machmir and says, I'll treat my horse the same, I'll treat my dog, my cat the same. It doesn't exist. And it's not just chamor, and it's not just shor, and it's not just those words. There are many, many words in the Torah, and I've spoken about this often, that are sometimes used exclusive and sometimes inclusive, and it drives you crazy without Torah Sheba'al Peh. Once you have Torah Sheba'al Peh, and once you accept that Torah Sheba'al Peh, oral law, is an inseparable part of Torah together with Torah Shebichtav, the written word, then your answers are there. But till then, it drives you crazy. You can't have a Brit Milah at night. You know why? Because it says, Bayom Hashmini Yimol Besar Orlato. On the eighth day, you shall circumcise. Not night. What about Zohor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadosho? Remember the Shabbat day to make it holy. That is mainly the mitzvah of saying Kiddush on Friday night. So wait a minute. You're saying that Yom in the context of Brit Milah is daytime and not nighttime, and Yom on the context of Shabbat is day and night. And the answer is yes. That's what we're saying, but we're not making this up. This comes from Torah Sheba'al Peh. One more example, which is related to this Sedra also. I think so. Let me make sure it's there. Yes. Ki yeshavu achim yachdav, when brothers live together, and one of them dies without a ben, then there is a relationship formed between his widow and his brother, which is either consummated as a, in English, levirate marriage, in Hebrew, yibum, or severed by a divorce-like procedure called chalitza. If the man who died didn't had a ben, then there is no yibum and no chalitza, and the widow is forbidden forever to her husband's brother. It's one way or the other. There either is yibum, which not only allows but technically requires them to marry, and if they are just brother-in-law and sister-in-law, because the deceased brother husband had a ben, then there is no yibum. Question, what's a ben? If you read that portion in this week's Sedra, every logic tells you that it means a son as opposed to a daughter. Because the purpose of yibum is to have a son, which will be continuing the name of the deceased brother slash husband. And that doesn't happen with a daughter. Comes Torah Sheba'al Peh and says, take your logic and put it back in your logic box, because the halacha is ben means offspring. Son, daughter, grandson, granddaughter, if the son and daughter are not around, it means any issue. And therefore, imagine the devastating mistake of saying this woman's husband died, they only had a daughter, so there should be yibum. You're talking about a capital offense to allow that marriage, thinking that it's acceptable because you interpreted ben exclusively, when the halacha based on oral law is that ben in this context is inclusive. Then you have an even more subtle distinction here. Vishinantam livanecha is a requirement not only to teach your son Torah, but to learn Torah as well on your own. And that, officially talking about Torah for the sake of Torah learning, not for the practical application of what you learn, applies to male and not female, because they say oral Torah says levincha. If you got it, vishinantam livanecha, livanecha velo livnotecha. This, is an old thing with girls shouldn't learn Gemara, blah blah blah, all of that stuff, which has changed in modern times in certain circles. But the point is that pure Torah for the sake of learning Torah, not for its practical value, is a male requirement and optional for females. Learning Torah for practical application is definitely an obligation on both male and female. But then you get to Pesach, where it says, V'higadta levincha b'yom ha'hu le'mor. You tell your child, levincha, you tell your ben. And there, it's a mistake to think that the mitzvah only applies to a son. It applies to daughters as well. Men and women are obligated to tell over the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim and its connection to the mitzvot, which is Haggadah. And it's not just male, even though the word levincha is used there, and it's used there in a different context. And one is exclusive and one is inclusive. Comments or questions?
Yeah, Phil,
No,
talking
Judy.
about Yibum, did you say two brothers were living together? I thought you started it by saying if two brothers lived together and one died, what difference does it
Yeah.
make if they lived together?
That's a good question. I don't know the context. The parsha dealing with Yibum and Chalitza begins with the words Ki Yeshevu Achim Yachdav. Now, if a brother lives in the States and another one lives in England and another one lives in Israel, you still have the same obligations. So you have a valid question. I don't have a good answer yet for it. I will try to find you an answer. Tirza.
Yeah, I wonder if I'm operating under a misunderstanding. Clarify this for me. I always thought, until you just said what you did about the brothers, if there's a brother they have, and a widow from a deceased brother, that surviving brother has to marry the widow. I always thought with Vinyl Slavchad, maybe I'm wrong, I always thought that the fact that their father's two surviving brothers, one was dead already, Ram was dead, neither one was required to marry their mother. I always understood it as that is proof that we five girls are children of our father for Yerusha purposes. Am I under?
What did I say differently?
Okay, am I? Okay, in other words, those two surviving brothers, I don't remember their names. It wasn't Ram. I don't remember the names of those brothers. If there had been no children, girls, one of them would have been required to marry Slavchad's widow?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so I understand it correctly.
Yeah,
Okay.
that's the fact of Chalitza, of Yibum and Chalitza. I was just saying that if you didn't know Torah Sheba'al Peh and you didn't know that halacha and you would just read the written word, your logic would push you in a different direction.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure I understood it correctly. Okay,
Friend
thank you.
of mine once visited a Bedouin sheikh. And there was a whole bunch of children running around. And he said, "How many children do you have?" And he said, "I have five sons and three other children."
That's how we refer to his daughters?
Yeah. His sons were the ones that he was focused on. Okay.
Phil,
Yeah.
Phil,
Yes.
just clarify, sorry. Somebody's husband died, they didn't have children. But if there is a brother who does have children, why do they still have to do Yibun Halitza if there is the,
To
if
give
that
the
name's still
name,
surviving?
to continue the lineage, so to speak, of the dead brother.
It's a
What,
storage of
how's
the dead.
that guarantee?
Family name. If one brother is alive and he's got children, that's still the family name,
Yeah, but
presumably.
it's not the continuation for the dead brother.
Okay. All
A
right. Yeah.
king
Thanks.
of Israel.
If the brother of the deceased marries the widow, he can continue to have daughters. Isn't
And he
that
can
his?
have no children, and he
I
can
know.
have five sons, but the first son that's born is
Or
called
no child, no son, no
on the
son.
name. Yeah.
He can never have sons. He can continue to have daughters.
And he could also have no children.
Right.
But that's not the point. The point is the goal, as expressed in the written word, is that a son from this special, unique kind of union will be named for him, maybe with his name, and in some mystical way will be considered his descendant. Lahakim Shemo be Yisrael. That's the language in the Torah. Look, rabbinic law has banned Yibum a long time ago because there is an alternative called Chalitza. And it's important to know that Chalitza, once upon a time, when there was Yibum, was considered a disgrace for the brother who refused to do Yibum with his sister-in-law and opted for Chalitza. And the ceremony of Chalitza was meant to say, you did the wrong thing because you're denying your brother what the Torah wants him to have through you. Once Yibum was banned by Chazal, then Chalitza is a formality. And no one should be upset by the fact that the widow still has to spit on the ground and remove his shoe and make a comment because that's all, it has lost its punch, to say it like that, because you can't do Yibum. And I'm not sure if the ban on Yibum, just like the ban on having more than one wife at the same time, I don't think it necessarily applies to Sfardim. So I do know that Sfardim, under certain circumstances, can marry a second wife. And
Even today, in contemporary times.
yes, yeah, it's not officially by the laws of the state of Israel, they can't, but there are situations when it can be done. Not only that, the ban on having more than one wife for Ashkenazim technically expired because it was a
Interesting.
1,000-year ban, and we're past that 1,000-year mark. So, Mark and David, pay attention, and any other guys here, no, it's still in effect. The ketuvah still mentions it. The Ashkenazi ketuvah still mentions a commitment not to take a second wife. And to me, this whole idea of second wives is summarized by the single word that she is referred to as. A second wife, in English, we would say a co-wife. In Hebrew, tzara. Tzara. Tzaras. Problems. So we don't have that.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, I wanted to pick some noteworthy things to point out. Yeah, I wanted to, this is an old idea, but I wanted to fine-tune it. There are a number of mitzvot in the Seder I mentioned the Shor v'Chamor. There's another one that you're not allowed. Oh, by the way, I should be a little clearer on that to add the Rambam. The Rambam is sort of a dat yachid. He's the only one I think that says this, that because Shor and Chamor are specifically one kosher animal and one non-kosher animal, that the Isur of harnessing them together on a Torah level is only when one is kosher and when one is not, which fits very nicely with the Dr. Seuss situation, because an elephant is not kosher and giraffe is. But the Rambam says that if you have an elephant and a donkey, that would be osur midrabbanan, but not d'oraita, because both are not kosher. And similarly, if you had a sheep and a cow, that would not be d'oraita according to the Rambam. According to everybody else, as far as I know, it would be osur min haTorah. Okay, but in any event, clearly or almost clearly, the prohibition of harnessing an ox and a donkey led Chazal to say it would be cruel to the animals, and that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu forbid it. Now you have to be very exacting here. If that is the reason that God said no, then the Torah would say so. But because the Torah says just Lo tacharosh b'shor v'chamor yachdav, and doesn't say why, Chazal are guessing. They're giving a very good guess. This seems obvious to prevent cruelty to the animal. Because look at the ox, a slow-moving, heavy animal, and a frisky donkey, which will create a tension between them that won't be comfortable for either of them. And that's Chazal's best guess as to why this is forbidden. Comes the Rambam and says, no, it's more connected to the prohibition of crossbreeding animals. You put two animals together in a harness, then maybe the next step is to actually crossbreed them. Okay. But then you have lo tachsom shor bidisho. You're not allowed to muzzle an ox when it's threshing. What was done in the old times and in the recreated villages that you could find in different places from old times is wheat stalks were thrown onto the threshing floor, and an ox was tied to a circular wheel by a harness, and he would walk around, and his feet would chomp on the grain, on the wheat, let's say, breaking open the husks, so that when he finished, the person would collect all of what was left of the wheat stalks, and then he would put it into a container and throw it up in the air, and the wind would blow away the chaff. And that's another malacha that was done. And then the hand picking out of the chaff from the kernels, and then eventually the use of the kernels for grinding into wheat, flour, and baking and stuff like that. So lo tachsom shor bedisho seems even more obvious than harnessing the two incompatible animals together as avoiding tsar balei chayim. An ox has food in front of it. It gets the munchies. It bends down to eat, and it can't because you put a muzzle on its mouth. That is osur min haTorah. And again, Torah doesn't say why. Chazal say, we think we got this one. It's to prevent cruelty to the animal. And on that mitzvah, they are consistent by saying, not just an ox, not just on the threshing floor, but any animal that is working in a food situation is not allowed to be muzzled, either on a Torah level or maybe further in rabbinic level, depending on the exact situation. So those are two examples of mitzvot in this sedra, but it doesn't have to be this sedra, that led Chazal to the body of halachic literature avoiding tsa'ar balei chayim. Add another one, which we mentioned on Monday, helping unload a beast of burden. Also, why? To avoid cruelty and pain to the animal. So those are three major foundation mitzvot to the whole structure of avoiding tsar balei chayim. Then you have in this sedra also a famous mitzvah because Yigal Salik made it into a song. Ki korei kan zipor lefanecha. If you happen upon a bird's nest, baderech, or in a tree, you can't take the mother with the eggs. You can't take the eggs from the mother. But the only thing you're allowed to do is shalech to shalach et ha'em, ve'tabanim tikach lach. Now, I've said this in the past, but I'm saying it again because you could share it at your table on Shabbos. There are two Mishnayot which say the same thing in different places, one in Brachot and one someplace else, which I don't remember at the moment. And that is Ha'omer, a person who says to God, be merciful on us like you show mercy to the mother bird with the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKen, mashtikin oto. You tell that person you can't say that. Don't say that, you can't daven that, you can't even suggest it, because this is not a mitzvah that lends itself to fall into that category of avoiding of cruelty to animals for many reasons. Number one, the mitzvah applies to a kosher bird, but not to a non-kosher bird. So already, plowing and planting, plowing with an animal, muzzling an animal, helping it unload a beast of burden. Doesn't matter whether it's a kosher animal or a non-kosher animal. An animal is an animal, and if it voids cruelty, then it's asur. And here, distinction. Kosher bird, yes, non-kosher bird doesn't apply. Doesn't apply to your own kosher birds, only to one you find in the wild. And you think chasing away the mother bird is an act of kindness? Maybe that's the worst thing that you could do. And taking the mother with the eggs seems logically that would be less cruel to the mother, but you're not allowed to do that. So when it comes to a mitzvah like Shiluach HaKen, the logic falls apart again. So this becomes a general warning in the whole picture here that be very careful when you think you know the reason for a mitzvah, because A, it is not likely that it is the whole reason, and sometimes it's not likely that it's any part of the reason. Because mitzvot are first and foremost commands by God. I don't remember in what context I said this. I don't think I said it on Monday, but if I did, I apologize for repeating. The very end of last week's sedra, you find a dead body that was had met with foul play in the field on the road. You measure what's the nearest town to it. And the elders of that town are brought to a certain location for a ceremony called Egla Arufa, where they have to publicly proclaim, we did not shed this blood, but the implication is that they were somewhat responsible because had their town been more hospitable. This person might not have been by himself and might not have been killed on the road. All right, that makes sense to me. But the ceremony involves taking a calf and killing it. Not for food, not for a korban. I could understand killing an animal for a korban because of the mitzvot of korbanot. I could understand being allowed to kill an animal to feed somebody, but to destroy a calf sounds cruel to me. I'm not challenging the mitzvah. The mitzvah is the mitzvah. I don't know how often it was done. Doesn't apply today. But my point is that we can be very comfortable with some mitzvot because we think we understand it, we got it, the picture is clear, and I'm saying the picture is not always as clear as we might think it is. I want to finish off what I started on Monday with Zachor. Now, this is a fine tuning, it's a tweak. And I'm not sure how many people do it. But the fact of the matter is that when Chazal quantified the amount of time between one public reading of Parshat Zohar and the next, they said it is a year. And a year is the definition of the time that memory starts to fade. That's why we have Yahrzeit. A Yahrzeit is meant to keep the memory of your lost ones fresh. You don't dwell on it, you don't cry all the time about it, but you don't forget it either. And they said the natural period of time of forgetting is a year. Now, the question is, what's a year? If you ask somebody on the street how long is a year, he'll say 365 and a quarter days, because that's how long a solar year is, even though it's a little less. It's 365.23 something, something, something. Based upon the leap year rule, forget that, we don't have to get into it. The problem is the Jewish year varies. We have 12-month years, which are either 353, 354, or 355 days long. We have Shana Meuberet, 13-month years with an extra Adar, which are 383, 384, or 385 days long. So if it doesn't matter how long a year is a year, and a year is has no variation, then we're okay. Parshat Zohar is the Shabbos before Purim, this year, next year, the year after, and that's enough. But if you want to be picky and you calculate, which I did, that the time from the last Zohar that we heard on the Shabbos before Purim passed, till the next time we're scheduled with Parshat Zohar is 385 days. So if 385 days is also a year, no problem. But if it's more than a year, then there is a suggestion this week when we read Parshat Ki Teitzeh. And the last portion is Zachor, Et Asher Asa Lecha Amalek, Baderech B'Tzeitchem Mimitzrayim, three psukim which are read on the Shabbos before Purim as Parshat Zachor. We should also have in mind maybe we need to hear it this week also for the sake of Zachor, because the Torah never said when we have a public reading of Zachor. It just said to remember what Amalek did. So the definition given by Chazal is Lo Tishkach, that's the last words in the Sedra, Lo Tishkach, do not forget, that's always. We never should forget what Amalek did, and that includes the Amalek types, and that includes the Shoah and the Inquisitions and the pogroms and Hamas and anyone who behaves in an Amalek-like way. That's always. There is no fixed time of year for that. That's every day, all the time. But zachor, verbalizing in the form of public Torah reading of Parshat Zachor, that's once a year. But the specific year, a specific time of year that was chosen is the Shabbos before Purim, because Amalek was, of course, Haman was a descendant of Amalek, and that makes a significant connection. But technically, you could fulfill that mitzvah any other time by the public reading of Zohar. It's not done, except this Shabbos, because it's in the in Parshat Ki Teitzei, we are going to be reading it. So there are some who suggest having the Baal Kori keep in mind that this may be is not just Torah reading, but it's also fulfillment of Zohar if we need it. And we should have that same kavana when we listen to it. That's what I have to say. Comments, questions? Judy?
Yeah, I didn't hear Zohar before Purim because I was in hospital. So just to have in mind, you're saying,
You
just have to
definitely
be
have to,
mindful
then you
while
definitely
reading this
should have
book.
in mind. But if you can get the Baal Kori to keep you in mind, or keep anyone in mind, that would
I'll
be
do
good
that. Yeah.
also. I
Okay,
don't know
thank you
how
for.
required that part is, but what I usually do is go to the Baal Kori before, sorry, Baal Kriya, Mark, and tip him off about that, and actually announce, and because I'm in that position in my shul, announce that people should have that in mind. Just like you, my daughter had another reason. I don't remember why she missed Zohar, but she did. And I told her to wait for Ki Teitzei, and she
It
wrote
was
up.
that Motzei Shabbos that Israel bombed Iran.
Yeah, okay, that could have done it.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much for Shabbos, everybody.
Good Shabbos to you.
Happy anniversary, Mark, and Simchas all around. Please, God.